I often say that addiction is the result of not knowing how to find safety inside of yourself. So you find it in something else, and understandably, you get hooked on it because you're desperate for safety. That's all you're guilty of. Any of you looking to learn more about supporting addiction recovery through a trauma-informed and somatic lens and a nutritional lens, please join me for my addiction circle. This is a bi-monthly, entirely free virtual circle that I invite anyone here to come and join if they want more information. Addiction tends to be so steeped in shame, and I find that doing this work in a community of people helps to destigmatize that shame so you can see how not alone you are in the experience. So whether you are personally withdrawing, preventing, experiencing relapse, or you work with people who are actively addicted or in recovery, all are welcome.
The next Addiction Circle will be held on Tuesday, May 7th at 5 p.m. EDT. This meeting is not recorded for the sake of anonymity. No registration is necessary. Just join through the link below.
Before we begin today's episode, I want to remind you that registration is now open for my next 6-week course. It will remain open for one more week until Monday, April 25th. To register, visit holisticlifenavigation.com. On today's episode, I speak with Nisha Muthi about how we can notice the joy right alongside the pain.
Well, something that came up for me was how making it make sense, right? Like making it make sense is our mind, right? So I could think, I'm going to make it make sense. And if it doesn't make sense, like, then what feeling is going to come out of that? Like, I'm going to be annoyed or frustrated. Or I can be like, realize it's all in my body. And like, it doesn't make sense, and laugh about it.
Welcome to the Holistic Life Navigation Podcast. I am your host, Luis Mujica. I was sick and depressed until I discovered that I could make music. And then my whole life transformed because I began learning how to listen more deeply. Listen to life, to the people around me, and to my body. And that's when I realized that the body speaks through sensations, and learning this new language meant relearning my body and mind. I soon healed myself of many chronic conditions and then began teaching others how to do so as well. Holistic Life Navigation combines nutrition, self-inquiry, and somatic experiencing to help you release stress and trauma just by listening to your own body. This podcast serves as a place to share my experiences, as well as the experiences of many others who have healed and are healing through unique, unorthodox, and unusual ways. Your time to learn begins now. I'm just on a roll with juicy conversations, and Nisha has just brought more juice in, lemon juice to be specific, and this will all make sense soon. Nisha's work is really gorgeous. She essentially holds space for people to connect with themselves and to see how much agency they have in their bodies, especially people whose identities have caused them to experience oppression in a systemic way. As well as people who don't, who may feel oppression in their own way, in their own internal judgments. I find this practice of relating to pieces inside of us in a non-binary way to be so important. We hear non-binary a lot in more of a pop culture, even political way right now, as we refer to gender. If we go into non-binary in terms of ourselves and our thinking, it just literally means not to see something as good or bad inside of you, but just to meet it with a curiosity. And all the prejudice and hate and pain that we have collectively, individually, it really comes from this inability to connect with the contradictory parts within ourselves. So it sounds strange when you're grieving and when you're in pain and when you're experiencing trauma to also attune to joy. In a binary thinking pattern, it doesn't make any sense, does it? And what I love about the body and about somatic psychology is if it isn't making sense, you're doing it right. It's very abstract because we're feeling into the body, and feelings are quite lawless. They don't have language. They don't have concepts of right or wrong. They don't even ask for permission. They are just there. And we either grow with a practice of cultivating a relationship to them, expanding our capacity to connect and see them, or we build a practice and culture of soothing, of coping, of distracting ourselves from them. And the culture I grew up with in America was the latter. Everything served to look outside of myself. All of my goals, everything that I was seeing growing up in magazines, on television, with the people I loved around me, it was all about a pursuit. It was this colonial reverberation of I need to go out and conquer, still moving through our tissues. And what I found interesting when I started just noticing that it wasn't working for me before I had any of this language was I started writing music, and in these songs were these extremely strange, bizarre characters and metaphors and stories that were super taboo and made no sense in the linear world. Songs that no one would ever even want to listen to because they were so sometimes grotesque and terrifying. And they were parts of me coming through on a piece of paper that I could then sing back to myself. And for many years, I spent hours and hours and hours locked in my room just writing and singing music. And it gave me this ancient, you know, wisdom that is the being of music, gifted me this opportunity to reflect the most unkind, dangerous, taboo, hated parts of myself into a story, onto paper, into a song where they could live safely and I could get to know them. And I really believe that was more powerful than any training I've ever done as a therapist in trauma work, as a coach, nutritionist. That was really what I needed to even live a good life, because now I wasn't afraid of what was going to come up inside of me. Even if something inside of me was scary, I had the tools to sit with it. And that's essentially what Nisha does. Teaches people how to feel those parts of them and how to access the joy and the agency, even in situations that seem opposed to that. So like I was saying earlier, when we have a binary way of thinking of right and wrong, good and bad, we get cut off from the rest of our experience. We attune only to the pain, only to the trauma, only to the oppression. Now, if we don't attune to that, and if we ignore that, or we deny that, we're bypassing it. That does nothing for us because our minds can bypass it, but our bodies are still being bathed in it. So what if I attune to both? What if I first attune to a place that's joyful or pleasurable or safe and build some resource in my physical body? And then from there, I have the capacity to look at this other thing that's really scary, really activating, possibly even pervasive if it's still going on. The practice of holding both and in my body means I'm expanding capacity for everything, because nature and this world is actually quite non-binary. It's humans that have created this idea of right and wrong and good and evil. And I want us to just sit with that and feel that as you listen to Nisha and I speak. It's a beautiful conversation, and it begins now. So I'd like to welcome Nisha Muthi to the show. Thank you for being here with us.
Thank you so much, Luis. I'm so humbled and excited to be in conversation with you.
So am I. You know, what made me reach out to Nisha was this gorgeous post that she put up actually after, I think what you listened to the podcast, right? With me and Minachi, is that right?
Yeah.
So I'm just getting it right now. I just had it here, but then I lost it. But it's essentially, as I'm finding it, it's just incredible. I mean, it's to me, it's beyond a post. It's like a practice, right? But you know, you wrote it so beautifully. And it's all about this practice of noticing the joy alongside the pain. Is that how you felt when you wrote it?
Yeah, that's how I felt when I wrote it. And as a result of listening to how Meenakshi described joy not bypassing pain or not bypassing other things that happen in our life. And I also had talked about how also in the context of like resilience, you know, kind of reframing joy or reframing resilience actually with joy in a way. So yeah.
Beautiful. I love that. So I'm going to read what Nisha written. So first you quote Meenakshi and it says, here Meenakshi talks about joy being a very expansive experience that can hold all emotions. I think of joy as like a sense of bliss that doesn't bypass life. It allows for all experiences. And then you wrote, this description of joy blew me away. After listening to this episode, the first thought I had was maybe we can reframe resilience and connect it with joy. Last year, I wrote an essay about how we can't talk about resilience without talking about trauma. So often, the narrative of resilience mirrors that of defying all odds and winning at life, inadvertently shaming those who can't meet those expectations. Parentheses, I agree. This completely dismisses those who, often due to systemic oppression and violence, don't fit that winning mold. And this is why I am even more enamored with joy. Joy doesn't ask you to win. It asks you to remember. It says things were hard and things were beautiful, sometimes at the same time. I don't want to block out the times I wished my dad offered me more emotion, or the 8 years I was partnered with my ex-husband, because these experiences gave me so much. I cultivated friendships, musical tastes, memorable evenings, emotional intelligence, and silent understandings that live in my heart forever. The fact is, if you look closely, joy is usually part of the story. Now I understand how access to this joy holds compassion for the people who didn't give me what I needed. To me, this joy is whole and nuanced and complex and painful, just like life. Woo! So that is so powerful. And reading it, I feel it all over again. And why don't we just kind of sit in that and tell me where that takes you now? It's been a while since you wrote it, but
yeah. Thank you so much for reading that. I had like tingles in my body. It really brings me to process, you know, and how we can have multiple feelings at once. And it's very layered. Like when I was maybe with my father, I mentioned him because he's passed away almost 10 years ago now. And, I didn't in many ways realize my relationship with him until after he left, years after he died. With my ex-husband, it was an abusive relationship. And yes, I harbored a lot of anger and pain as a result. And on a deeper level, you know, I also see everyone as a teacher, you know, and that brings up so many different types of emotions that are layered. And sometimes those emotions come up later, right? So it's like, knowing that I don't know what emotions are there or like the timing of them, I think is really interesting. So yeah, to me, it brings up so much about process and about how in so many ways we might think, you know, in the first year or two after my father died, I mean, of course I was sad and I was grieving him, but I often talk about how in the past couple of years I have so much, there's so much more emotion that has come up, you know? So it's like, you don't know until you know. And I think that's what's really coming up for me and how beautiful the unexpected can be on that level. And that is what joy is to me as well.
What I appreciate so much about how you reflect this experience and how you wrote about it and how we're speaking about it, often when I'm in my course with people or, you know, a group and teaching these practices as well, some people will say something like, but if I attune to my joy, isn't that bypassing? And I love that you brought up bypassing and so did Meenakshi, because it's so important to me. For me, what you said at the end about joy is as complex and includes the pain. It's all part of the same spectrum, essentially, of sensation, because every experience is so like juicy, isn't it? With so many different varying, you know, emotions connected. So what I've always loved to notice, and I'd like to hear how you experience it, is when I look out at the world and I see injustice or violence or pain, or I experience it myself, the bypassing would be pretending it doesn't exist. Whereas the attuning to joy would be, okay, it exists and so does my joy. And then I'm more resourced. Tell me what that's like for you. What does that mean for you?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it's, I feel very similarly. It's that bypassing is acting like it doesn't exist or that it doesn't affect me. So it doesn't matter too. Yes. I think that that's maybe on a subconscious level, right? Or it can be on a conscious level too. That to me reminds me just of like kind of this bootstraps individualism mentality, often reinforced by white supremacy. And, so there's that. And so to me, there's like a collective component to it. I think, you know, I think that's what comes up in terms of collective as all of us as a large global community, whether it's collective within our family structure, whatever that may be, and collective within our body. You know, I was actually listening to your, today it was your latest episode about body sovereignty and seeing it as another being. And I thought about how, like, even that as a collective, our mind, our body, like us, like, just looking at things on that more holistic level, right? Holistic navigation. So, I think that that's really kind of what comes up for me with that. And I also want to add, when you said juicy, I loved that because the first thing that came up to me when I thought of juicy was a lemon, and how when you heat a lemon in the microwave, like my mom will say, like, put it in the microwave for 10 seconds, more juice will come out. So how are we also nurturing ourselves or shifting the way we move through the world so that like different juices come out, I guess, you know? So I had to like bring up that metaphor because I'm like, oh yeah, like we can do different things. Like I can just keep the lemon in the fridge and like let it dry out, or I can try to warm it up. So where does choice come into all of this as well? You know, so that's kind of when you said all that, what came up.
Okay, now this conversation is getting juicy because now I'm thinking, I love the lemon example because, so when you were talking about bypassing as not even by denying, right? I think I was speaking more toward denial, but bypassing as I'm not feeling it, like it doesn't affect me. Mm-hmm. So one of my friends and colleagues, Amber McSeal, who's been on my podcast, we did an event last night with my membership about decolonization. And one of the things that she was saying was our feelings have become very colonized, right? Just like when you were talking about the winning mentality, mm-hmm. there's these winning emotions as well. And then there's these like weak emotions. And so this kind of forms from when you said white supremacy, which is a branch of, you know, colonization and colonialism, this place that we've been bathed in, many of us in this, where do you live? Are you in America?
Yes, I'm in Los Angeles.
Okay, I figured like in an American culture, we've been bathed in such a post-colonial context where these emotions, like if we think of the warm lemon and all of its nuance and juiciness, so many of those have been overcoupled with like shame and weakness and straight up danger and threat, depending on what kind of body you live in, what kind of family system maybe you come from or cultural system. And so I find it interesting when we think about the act of decolonizing our own bodies, which is very different than decolonizing land. When we decolonize our bodies and we start to notice, oh, all that cultured conditional shame around feeling nuance, when I go into that, it's like that warm lemon. But when I'm bypassing, it's that cold lemon. All those juices are just being stored and shoved down. And that's where trauma comes in. So I'm throwing a lot out, but it's coming up in me as you're speaking. So I'm curious what you're hearing and where that goes.
Oh gosh, I love it. Yeah. Like, yeah. I mean, I love like any analogy that relates to like food or gardening or any of that. I think it makes sense, right? Like that's like a microcosm of the world, right? Mm-hmm. And yeah, like bypassing kind of tells us we don't need the lemon. Like it doesn't serve a purpose. it's there and I am here, as opposed to what can its use be, you know, and then what can I do with it? It's, and in a way it's like creation too, right? Cause I could just take it out and leave it on the counter. Right. You know, another thing I do is I put it down my garbage disposal to clean it out. You know, I could do that. I think it, I liked how you said like getting into it is like the juiciness and the nuance. I really loved that because, it is in that nuance of holding things that might be oppositional, but can completely coexist that I think that's where healing is. You know, to me, a healing is so much of a return to yourself. It's actually not like covering anything up. It's actually going in and like, getting to know yourself, you know, it's a becoming and an unbecoming at the same time. And I don't see these things as binaries, just as I don't see pain and joy as binaries, you know, and binary thinking, you know, there's, those characteristics of white supremacy, thinking that binary thinking is one of them. So one actually metaphor, another metaphor, I love metaphors and frameworks. I think about is how, you know, when we look at like pain and joy or something that's like on a binary, gender or whatever, I think of it instead of looking at on a in terms of being linear, on that binary is, I think about a sphere. And how, well, first of all, we are on a sphere on this earth, right? Literally and figuratively, like, where are we on this sphere in our own experience? And how are we knowing others in that way in our own experience? And how does me thinking about, you know, these feelings that I'm experiencing, for example, I have a very good friend whose father just passed away a couple weeks ago. And here I am 10 years out from my father passing away, you know, and my experience of grief with him now affects the relationship I have with my friend in that I can speak to her about this experience differently because I've gotten into those juices. I was just telling my partner the other day that now I feel like I can talk about my experience of grief about my father differently because now there's like 10 years of an ocean behind me that I can kind of look back at. And so, yeah, it's like, how am I like, how is that, like almost like the marinating of that happening, you know? And how can I look back? Cause I could have spent the last 10 years not going to therapy, not talking about my grief, avoiding it. I don't know, like just being away from those feelings, or I could sit with it. And there were times I probably did be away from it, you know? And that is also, I think, I want to also bring judgment of feelings into this, right? Like, how am I judging, you know, myself moving into my feelings? How is avoidance of my feelings? Avoidance of my feelings and also rationalization of my feelings, a way of avoidance, right? So yeah, I'm not sure if any of that like was cohesive with what you said, but that's everything that came up for me.
Hey, my friends, I want to take a break from the episode to remind you that my next 6-week course begins on Monday, May 2nd. Registration for this course opens on April 5th. That same day, I'll be hosting a live webinar with replays that explains how the course works, shows you what it looks like, and answers any of your questions live. Any of you that really want to get into this course, go to my website right now, holisticlifenavigation.com, and click on the course at the top. And then click Join Waitlist. This guarantees you a spot because you'll receive an email 1 week before registration opens inviting you to early register. So then you get in before it sells out. This course is my favorite thing right now because we're joined by a global group of people, first of all, who are coming together around the same piece, wanting to release their stress and trauma through listening to their body. So a bunch of body listeners get to sit together live for 6 weeks. And through the 6 weeks, you have ongoing support with a private online community space we've created and from me and my team to answer your questions, help you with any technical issues, and emotionally guide and support you throughout the 6 weeks. For more information on the course, visit holisticlifenavigation.com. Now let's get back to the episode. As you're speaking, there's like these little fruits of this tree that I'm like plucking from that I want to talk about. You know, I love when you said about judging feelings. Mm-hmm. If we all, everyone listening to this, if we think about somatically what that means, right? That literally means there's a defensive posture against a sensation. So mm-hmm. like a sensation of grief or tenderness or tired or vulnerable or scared, you know, whatever it is. And a part of the body literally is constricting to not feel it. Or mm-hmm. like you said, there's like this internal flight response to the mind to figure it out, to think about it, to validate, unvalidate. And by doing that, again, you're removing yourself from feeling the sensation. I find that to be so important because of what you said before, which is the binaries of sensation mm-hmm. and the reality that within our bodies and psyches are so many contradictory beings and feelings and beliefs and desires that don't make sense. Mm-hmm. And this inability to sit with the non-binary in us, in my opinion, is where all this prejudice comes from in the external world. I can't be with the part of me that feels strong and weak at the same time. So I have a binary that gets put out and says, you're right if you do this, you're wrong if you do this. And that turns into so many categories of sex, gender identity, religion, skin color, culture. It just goes on and on and on. Mm-hmm. And so when you were saying I forget exactly how you said it, something like the parts that oppose can also get along. You said something along those lines. That's the work that lights me up the most, because in this earthly experience, we are constantly, especially on the American continent now, we are always sharing a space with so many different cultures and peoples and beliefs and opinions. And if we can't even share space in our bodies with our own contradictory feelings, we can't tolerate someone else's, right? And that's really where oppression, for me, that's where it seems like it's rooted from the individual. It's become systemic, but the individual body, it's like it's born from that posture. Tell me what you think about that.
Ooh, yeah. I tend to kind of see like the top down and bottom up is like a confluence for sure. It's kind of like chicken and the egg, like where does it start? But I do think what we have like that sovereignty over is our body, right? And what you had said about, something that came up for me was how, making it make sense, right? Like making it make sense is our mind, right? So I could think, speaking of judgment, I could think I'm going to make it make sense. And if it doesn't make sense, like then what feeling is going to come out of that? Like I'm going to be annoyed or frustrated, or I can be like, realize it's all in my body and like, it doesn't make sense and laugh about it.
Oh yes. I love that.
So how am I bypassing my body by trying to make it make sense? Right. So that like just really, really came up for me. And what was the last thing you said? Sorry. I'm like, that was something that was really prevalent in my mind when you were
I want to marinate in that for a moment.
Okay. Okay. Cool.
Cause I think of the quote from Alok, you know, who's like they're like a non-binary activist, fashion icon, lots of things. But something they said was like, I don't need to understand you to love you. Mm. And you don't have to understand me to love me. And every time I say it out loud, I get chills. And it's exactly what you're saying, isn't it? It's like being able to sit in the ambiguity with a sense of curiosity and openness it's so sensational and abstract and so... it's beyond even the word ancient to me. You know, it's before language and context and idea and concept. It's just this like nature in us that comes through. And when we get to that place of trying to make sense of it, we literally lose the practice of first building capacity for what's there already. And we create, again, an entire culture of soothing and coping and distracting. And like when I think of dominant culture, again, I really see it through the lens of somatic trauma work mm-hmm. because I see these people who are trying so hard, as you said in your post, to win. And that's mm-hmm. such an adrenalized state that's like shocking you out of your sensational body. You're like disembodied mm-hmm. in your pursuit of happiness, you know? So I just find it, what you said, really important, that piece of what if we didn't try to make sense of it? What if you mm-hmm. just felt it and were with it? And that's what I said at the end that you asked me to repeat. I see every kind of binary in our external world. And that, to me, binary eventually turns into prejudice. I don't know how it can if you think one's right, one's wrong. But every like external binary comes from, for me, the inability to individually and collectively hold the ambiguity of ourselves, right? Since someone mirrors a part of ourselves we haven't been able to hold yet, and then we hate them for it.
Okay, yeah, totally. And so one of my teachers is James Olivia Chu Hillman, who I know you've had them on your
podcast. Oh, wonderful.
James Olivia is amazing. And it just makes me think, I'm in one of their programs now in regard, and it makes me think about being with someone and relating to them. And how being with, how that's also about being with ourselves, you know? And yes, completely. I feel like I can now sit with my mother, who's one of my greatest teachers on many levels. And
oh, yeah.
Much more than I used to. But also, you know, there's times where I need certain space and boundaries, you know? And I think it's like, I don't have to understand you, but I can try to know you. And I think that's something that kind of reminds me of what James Olivia talks about a lot. Like, I want to know you and understand you because you have all this juiciness in you that I don't know. And maybe you don't know. And like, let's explore it together. And also, how have the conditions of the world maybe made you a threat to me or me a threat to you, you know? And not just how can we be with each other? First of all, can we? Because one thing James Olivia taught me also is that I don't have to relate to everybody. I can make that choice. And that choice is powerful. And that doesn't mean in 2 weeks, I might want to relate to you and might want to know you, but maybe now I can't and I'm one person and that's okay. But yeah, and that also is connected to something I've been thinking a lot about lately is how, what other people awaken within us. You know, I was just on a family vacation with my mom and brother for a couple weeks ago. And I was thinking about the things that were frustrating me. And also the things that were happening that used to frustrate me and no longer frustrated me, in seeing how, my own process of being with the different parts of the ways I feel now are reflected in how I am. What is being awakened within me when they say something that might have formerly been super activating for me? Or maybe they say it 5 times and then I'm all of a sudden activated again, you know? So all of that being like in my own process and in my own, evolution of sorts, how that has now shifted my relationship with them, because now something, what's being awakened with me is within me is different. You know, or has shifted. So yeah. And I think that has to do with like, because I'm no longer bypassing myself, coming back to that, right? I'm no longer bypassing all the juiciness within me because I am warming it up and letting all of it kind of come out as much as I can within my capacity. And I think that's also really, really important. Like I am one person and I am a human being and I cannot do it all at once. And yeah. So where in this timeline of the sphere has it all kind of, I love just like bringing it all together.
As oh yeah.
where, how does that bring me here where I am now? You know? Yeah.
2 words you said, and then I want to pivot into your work, you know, and what you offer to the world. Cause I usually start with that, but yeah. We just like jumped into philosophy and practice, which I so admire you for being able to do with me. These 2 words you said are my favorite words, relate, capacity. And I love when you were saying, you know, like I'm allowed to choose if I relate. I don't have to relate to everybody. Mm-hmm. I'm allowed to choose and I might change in a couple of weeks. That speaks to capacity, because I love the term capacity, because as like a human physical body, it only has so much capacity for relationship and activation and sensation and not eating and not sleeping. You know, it has so much capacity. My desires have limitless capacity because they're from the ether. They don't have a physical, you know, wall they hit. So I love this practice, and I'm projecting this onto you. Okay, I have a practice with capacity, which is just bowing to that at all times. And then from there, I decide how I'm able to relate. And when I hear you say, you know, I don't have to understand you, but I want to know you, I really hear that to know relating, you know, like, because the knowing you, the idea of you is something that I create, and it will change, and it might even compress you if I've created an idea, an expectation. And to relate to you is literally relate to what's in front of me. You know, you as you are in front of me, how am I able to relate to that? And if I have warmed up that lemon and I'm like all about those juices and I'm like good with them that day, like I have capacity for all those juices, yeah. I'm going to relate to pretty much anyone. And it doesn't mean like I allow anyone to hurt me. That's not relating. It sure. just means there's this openness and curiosity of like, oh, what's before me? Because I've already made friends with what's in me. And then when, like you said, when something awakens in me that I haven't made friends with, it's like, whoa. Thank you, teacher. And I might never want to see that teacher again, but what they've awakened in me is mine for life to be with now. So, I mean, that's how I heard what you were saying. Is that similar for you or is it different?
Oh yeah, no, that is so right on. And I think when we talked about, well, you said capacity and then limitless, like I also saw that as like the limits we have in the moment versus the limitless desires we can always have, and seeing both of those things together is like a beautiful connection in so many ways. So yeah, I mean, yeah, what you said was exactly where I was going with that. And I loved how you brought that all together. So thank you.
Yeah, no, thank you. This has been such a rich, really wonderful conversation. I'm definitely going to want to talk to you again in the future in some capacity. Oh,
wonderful.
I want you to tell us about you. Like, what's your story? What's your short story that you want to tell? You know, like, how do you move in the world? What do you offer? What should people listening know about you based on what we're talking
about?
Sure.
I think what people should know about me is that I am a person who I've had so many careers. And I'm someone who, ever since I was young, wondered, what am I going to be when I grow up? That question that kids are always asked. And, you know, one thing I realize now is that I feel like the question that I wasn't asked, or none of us are really asked, is who I want to be. I try to bring that into the work I do. I'm a feminist healing coach. I on a very practical day-to-day level, I work with organizations. I work with individuals and groups doing coaching and facilitating and just connecting. A connection is one of my values. And I just love connecting, whether it's in a space like this with the two of us, as well as, you know, in the future, connecting with your audience and just getting to know people and seeing different ways of being. I'm all, like I said, all about these different ways of frameworks and of thinking in terms of these different frameworks. And I also couple curiosity and humility together as one of my values, because I think that being curious offers a space to be humble. So like I said, I call myself a feminist healing coach. And really that to me is someone where I look at supporting people through life through an anti-oppressive lens, keeping in mind that we have so much sovereignty and choice, more than we think, and systems of oppression want to make us think that we don't. So like kind of like what I was saying, that top down, bottom up, like where do we meet ourselves in that space? I'm currently running a group about boundaries for BIPOC, called Boundaries for BIPOC, where I'm taking a look at what boundaries look like specifically in a space where Black, Indigenous, and or people of color can hopefully, you know, find some safety to talk about that, whether it's looking at boundaries around whiteness, which is always there. And also within our own personal realms or within our different circles that we are in community. And I love to do these things as a collective activity because, again, thinking about the winning and supremacy culture in general, I don't want to be that person who, you know, is the expert or like knows everything, because I think we all are experts on ourselves, you know? So yeah, that's what I put out into the world. I talk to organizations about being trauma-informed, showing up, collective care, which all of this is just very rooted in my values, you know, a few of which I've mentioned already. So yeah, I mean, I've worked as a speech language pathologist. I worked as a librarian, as a consultant. A lot of my own healing journey actually started with writing and memoir writing. So I've wrote several essays that all started with The death of my father and my divorce were within a year of each other, you know? So it was really losing these two very, prominent male figures in my life. And, that just like really catapulted this awakening for me, that was the beginning of my own healing process. And, you know, I think healing is a word that I myself, you know, think about and contend with, because I also like to talk about how there's nothing to be fixed. We aren't broken, you know? And that's kind of where I come to the point that healing to me is, I reframe it as a returning back to ourselves. You know, really like, who are we? And I think the last thing I'll say is there's this podcast called Hurry Slowly. I'm not sure if you've heard of it. I'm forgetting the host's name, but she has an episode where she talks about who are you without the doing. And that brings me back to, what do you want to be when you grow up? Like outside of our actions, like, who are we? You know, because I could say I'm a feminist healing coach. I was a writer, blah, blah, blah. I was a speech therapist. But one thing I realized, even though I've had all of these trajectories in life, the one thing I kept bringing to all of this stuff was me, you know, my way of being in this world rather than the doing. So yeah, I think I'll close out on that in terms of how I move through the world and how I be in this world, how I am in this world. So yeah.
I mean, you just awakened like 10 new things I want to talk about with you. So I'm not going to do that right now, but I really want to. I'm so happy that I got to connect with you and just get to feel a little bit of your spirit. It's so beautiful. And like when you're talking about, you bring yourself to all these, your values come to whatever it is you're doing. It's really just your values. And it's you connecting and relating to these people and organizations. It's really clear, you know, there's certain people that you meet who do this work and you really feel like it's their personal culture and practice. It's not just like work they teach, it's like how they live. And I really get that from you, and it's so settling and just such a relief. So thank you for you, and thank you for your work. And anyone that, you know, I don't even know your full story, but anyone that goes through any kind of pain or oppression or trauma and emerges with like a bigger heart is always my hero. So I thank you for being that person.
Wow. Here. Wow. I'm taking that in. Thank you so much, Luis. And I am so appreciative to be in this space with you and to evoke more of the juiciness that is that lemon.
Let's make way of those lemons. Let's go do it right now.
We'll never look at lemons the same.
I will never look at a lemon the same again, I promise you.
I'm so glad. I'm so glad that we have that lemon connection. So yeah, thank you so much for inviting me and yeah, for connecting. So grateful.
Okay, my friend, I look forward to seeing you in the future. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, I hope you enjoyed today's episode. My question for you is, where do you feel the episode? Take a breath and just notice, what's your body doing right now? Sit with it, let it speak to you, and let whatever comes up, come up. And your only job is to listen. For all the wisdom you need is right inside of you. To learn more about my work, you can visit holisticlifenavigation.com and sign up for my mailing list. You'll receive a weekly newsletter with specific monthly topics, free resources, and upcoming events. You can also follow me on Instagram. If you like my podcast, please leave a review and share. Thank you so much for joining me. I'll see you next time. Hey everybody, it is time. It is time to hop on a plane, a train, a boat, a goat, a bike, a car, and find your way upstate New York to a little town outside of Phoenicia. I don't know what the town's called actually, but the place that we're going to be in is called Menla, and it is a gorgeous, epic retreat center in the middle of the forest in the Catskill Mountains with a spa and organic
vegetarian food with lots of beans and yoga in the morning and a swimming pool and a swimming hole and trails. And yes, it is an HLN retreat. It is a 5-day retreat from Wednesday, June 12th to Sunday, June 16th. It is the biggest retreat we've ever put on, and the entire team is going to be there. They are all flying from different corners of the country to come together to hold you in the healing magic that is Somatics. We will be teaching you how to belong without having to fit in, how to find safety inside of yourself and share that with others, how to receive witnessing, how to feel for your boundaries instead of fawning. We are going to cover so much, and you're going to be doing it in the most ideal setting of being fed, of being loved, of resting, of enjoying the forest and nature, and being with us and 60 other bodies. So please go to the website, holisticlifenavigation.com, and click on events, and you'll find it there. Wednesday, June 12th to Sunday, June 16th. All the info as well can be found directly through the link in this episode details. I am just so thrilled for this, and I can't wait to see some of you in person.